coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware. Windows 8.1, the start button is back, people. NVIDIA's GeForce GTX 770, where's the price drop on the 680? Xbox versus PlayStation 4, we're done talking memory now. Razer's building gaming notebooks and an awesome case with cooling fins. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 220, recorded on May 30th, 2013. New GPU, where's the price drop?
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Manpax. Manly goods on a schedule. Get started today and have underwear, socks, toiletries, shaving supplies, and more delivered to your door. Visit manpax.com/twit and get $10 off your first order of $30 or more, or buy a $50 gift card for $40.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm your host, Patrick Norton, and this is the show on the Twit Network where we try to bring you the most useful, most important, and, well, sometimes just weirdest news in computer hardware. We love the tablets, and occasionally we talk about the phones, but mostly we are all about PCs and Macs. We love us some x86 computing, preferably low cost and high power, except when we got somebody else's money, in which case we will spend all of it for you. Mostly, though, we like the bargains. Interesting week this week. We'll talk about Tamash being announced last week. Are you done talking about the Xbox One and the PS4? I assume you and Alan got to just hash that out, getting into the whole GDDR5 versus GDDR3, you know, the 8 yeah. meg thing, the more shaders on the PlayStation 4.
Yep.
Which no one may actually use if everybody's, you know, going for the lowest common denominator of gaming.
We did talk about it last week, but you know, it's just been something that's kind of been rehashed over and over in several discussions I've had over the last week, and it's, you know, it's still really interesting to me to finally, you know, maybe I'm actually just decided today that I'm going to go out to E3 in the middle of June and hopefully maybe sit down with some of these hardware guys and kind of ask them what was your reasoning behind picking the hardware configuration you did versus the hardware configuration that your competitor did and kind of compare and contrast stuff.
It's because I was thinking about this as we were talking about, Robert and I were talking about it on Techzilla. I mean, it's so odd when you look at these two parts, right? Because it's, you know, obviously it's just two companies that have done so many radically different things with their consoles. All of a sudden, they're both using AMD Jaguar based parts. They're both running approximately the same clock speed. They both have 8 gigabytes of RAM. Sony's has 50% more shaders than Microsoft does. Microsoft's going for a less expensive memory technology. Sony's going for a more advanced memory technology that we hope scales, right? Because has AMD proven? I apologize. I cannot remember. I keep wanting to call it hyperlinking, but obviously that's
no.
The pooled memory resources between on the APU between the
So you're talking about like a shared memory structure between the CPU right. and the GPU. It's interesting about both designs, the AMD design and the Sony design and the Microsoft design. Neither of them are actually fully HSA compliant, HSA being the heterogeneous systems architecture, which uh-huh. means they don't actually have completely natively shared memory systems. I guess it's a memory address spaces.
Really?
That's actually like the next generation of APU that will be coming out from AMD. Now, I don't think that matters so much for a gaming console because, you know, the compilers, the development engines and that kind of stuff that are built by Sony and built by Microsoft in order for developers to code for it will be, you know, super tuned for that platform and that kind of stuff. So I don't think it's a huge loss that it's not. I mean, they're still able to share...
It's supposed to keep people from running, you know, Linux on it, right?
Yeah, well, that's one. Yeah, that'll definitely be one of the things they prevent from doing that. Although we'll be curious to see if people can hack it and put like regular Windows on it, and we can like perform and benchmark, you know, things differently that way. It would be really cool to do.
I say 6 weeks.
6 weeks before it's cracked and running.
I think that's like, I think you're overshooting it. I'm thinking it'll be in the days.
Really?
Days, yeah. I mean, it's just x86, right? I mean, what can they do?
So, but getting back to the memory choices.
Yeah. So the difference of GDDR5 and DDR3 plus an SRAM that Microsoft went with, the GDDR5 is a higher bandwidth. I think it's like 170 something gigabytes per second. It's been rated at for that, but it's a little bit higher latency. But on a GPU, that doesn't really matter because you're constantly feeding it data. The bottleneck is not latency for branch mispredictions. It's the bottleneck is always how much data can you give me as quickly as possible. So it doesn't really affect the GPU, but it'll be interesting to see how maybe that memory interface affects the CPU x86 processing portion on the PS4 versus what Microsoft did, which was they went with a standard DDR3 architecture, very, very similar to what you have on any APU today, like Trinity or the upcoming Richland parts and that kind of stuff. They use a common memory interface that is a DDR3 interface, but Microsoft has added an SRAM. I think it's like 32 megs of essentially another level of cache on the part, somewhat similar to what they did on the Xbox 360 with the AMD graphics system that they use there. So they have a lot of experience with that. Obviously, they liked the results. I've heard some theories that having this static RAM, this SRAM on board actually allows them to do the context switching more quickly, so they can switch between, you know, their big pushes. Now you can switch between TV. Now you can switch between games. Now you can switch between different apps and that kind of stuff. And that might improve that. Whereas Sony's is purely for raw compute performance, raw gaming performance, GPU raw performance, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I'm really curious to see how this plays out with developers on the PS4 and how. You know, it's kind of funny because we've been saying for a while now, like, you know, don't sweat memory speed that much. You're not going to notice a difference between, you know, memory, a 300 or even a 600 megahertz difference in memory speed in the vast majority. It's like you can probably benchmark it if you're really bored, but in real world use, you're not really going to be able to notice anything. I'm really curious how this plays out for Sony. Yes.
Yeah. The only thing I would say that is true on a CPU architecture, but on GPU architecture, if you look at some of the lower end parts, like NVIDIA released the GTX 650 or the GT 650, you could either get GDDR3 memory or you could get GDDR5 memory. And even with just that being the only difference, you know, in the associated clock speed and bandwidth differences, you could actually see noticeable performance differences going between them. So that's why, you know, I can't imagine there's going to be a huge difference between them. So I do believe that the Microsoft's implementation of the SRAM on their part is going to make up for a lot of that bandwidth limitation you get by going with DDR3 over GDDR5.
One of the things that's been postulated is that Microsoft will probably be producing a less expensive box and therefore more mass merchandisable, more likely to be accepted by the masses? Question mark? I mean, it seems like... Or is the price difference between DDR3 and DDR5 less significant?
I mean, the price differences are there. GDDR5 is definitely more expensive, but you know the cost of that SRAM, I don't know what that's going to add into Microsoft's equation as well. You know, I'm going to assume if the SRAM is built onto the die, which I assume it is, that the Microsoft chip may actually be a little bit bigger than the PlayStation chip, even though it has more shaders. Because if it doesn't have any huge caches on it or something like that, then the 32 megs of memory or whatever it is, maybe it's 64 megs, should take up significant die space, I guess, all things considered. So in terms of heat, I think the PlayStation one will generate more. So it will probably have to be... either a louder system or a larger system, which is hard to think of because when you saw the Xbox One, it's a pretty big machine, pretty big blocky. Actually, I love somebody. I think somebody had like a one of the original Toshiba HD DVD players. Right. They like put a marker on it and wrote Xbox One on the top of it and then like posted that. And it was like, wow, that's pretty close. Little color scheme matching there and everything.
Well, it's funny though, because there's a, you know, obviously the Red Ring of Death looms heavily in the recent history of Microsoft, and it's a big, well cooled, spacious, airflowy kind of box. I mean, they obviously were thinking about the thermal design points on this and making sure they were more than adequately met. And it looks like it's stackable, although literally half of the console is set up for airspace. In any case, I just wanted to ping you on that. Apple announces a new $229 16-gigabyte iPod Touch with a 4-inch Retina display, no rear-facing camera. Apparently, the fine folks at Apple have sold 100 million iPod Touches. Just in case you thought that was dead. And the other odd news this week, along with the iPod Touch, is that Razer has moved into gaming notebooks. Did you catch up? Did you see this one? They were actually showing this off in San Francisco. And let me copy a link into the show notes. Anantech's got a good write-up on it. Essentially, Haswell-based Blade and Blade Pro gaming notebooks.
Okay.
So this is sounding familiar?
Yes.
Or you're bored with it already. All right, fine. Well, that was interesting. From mice to gaming notebooks, I thought was a pretty big jump. Although the truth is they're essentially manufactured in the same way as that you put together your spec, you take it to an engineering facility or a manufacturing facility overseas, and they build it to your spec, hopefully extremely well. Razer's had really good luck with their products, I think. Although I personally find some of their mice completely unusable, I was actually delighted to see a laptop that is, you know, they've got a little bit of the like Alienware green glow going on there. But for the most part, I didn't look at that and think to myself, that would hurt to use for extended gaming sessions. It's actually pretty.
I think Burke wants us to point out the fluorescent green USB ports on it as well.
Yeah, I was actually jamming on the fluorescent green USB ports.
I like that. The
backlight on that. So, you know, I mean, it's certainly, you know, maybe not an homage to Alienware, but certainly recognizing the ever so colorful nature of gaming systems.
I think it looks good. I think it looks good.
I like it.
Haswell plus discrete graphics, NVIDIA GT 750 or GT 765, I think, options in there. So.
Yeah. Haswell, that's one of the biggest round of rumors around Haswell lately, is that suddenly Haswell is going to produce 50% battery life boost. I think that
will be the case in very select instances.
Okay.
But I mean, you're not going to take the same kind of design that's going to go from 5 hours to 7.5 or 8 or something like that. And there will be some instances where it will. I think the biggest claim for battery life improvement is the whole idea of connected standby and the fact that you could have fresh data, as they call it, instantly when you turn on your machine. And you can have, you know, I think 10 to 14 days of connected standby time on machines with the new sleep states that Haswell will have. So that's pretty cool.
New sleep states.
Yeah.
NVIDIA GeForce GTX 770, the GK104 speed bump. Mr. Ryan Schrout, you wrote that up for PC Per. What is the word on the latest shiny from NVIDIA?
So last week you missed us talking about the GTX 780, which was a GTX Titan that they cut off some of the processing to, took the memory from 6 to 3 gigs and sold it for $650.
Practically in my price range.
Practically. the GTX 770... is actually going to sell for $399. Mm-hmm. So $40 to $50 less than the GTX 680 as it currently sells. And here's what's interesting is that the GTX 770 is essentially the exact same part. In fact, two weeks ago, there were actually firmwares kind of floating around on the internet that said, hey, if you install this, if you flash this to your GTX 680, you can have a GTX 770. And it's the same GPU. 1,536 shaders, 256-bit memory bus, 2 gigs of memory or 4 gigs of memory, you know, optional depending on what the add-in card vendor wants to do. And the clock speeds get a very modest bump on the core speed by about 40 or 50 megahertz. And then the memory clock goes from 1,500 megahertz to 1,750 megahertz. So that's a pretty sizable jump. It goes from 6 gigabits per second to 7 gigabits per second.
So are you telling me if I want two-thirds of a Titan, all I need to do is buy a 680, track down this firmware on the internets and install it. And my 680 will perform like a 770, which is three quarters of a Titan.
Well, see, here's the thing. The performance difference between a 680 and a 770 is like 5%.
Right.
It's very minimal.
What's the pricing difference?
That's what I was actually just looking up, because I was curious if the 680s ever went down in price, because the, like I said, 680 and 770 are essentially the same part. The 680 is going to go away. So I'd expected to see 680s kind of selling for a lot cheaper, and they're not. Looks like there's one for 420, but then you've got 440, 450, 460, which doesn't make any sense to me why you would pay for that now at this point if the GTX 770s are also on Newegg.com for $399.
Maybe because vendors haven't sold out their stock yet and they're refusing, or maybe they don't have any 770s to sell and they won't start dropping the 680.
Newegg has a bunch of them listed, like almost a dozen or something like that. But it's very odd. So it's like one of those things where what should happen is NVIDIA should discount that GPU to those add-in card vendors so they can sell through stock. And, you know, the 680 should be $380 or $370 or something like that. And we should all move on our merry way. Because the 770 is great. I mean, it's a great deal because you're getting a little bit more performance for $40 or $50 less than you would have gotten it for last week. And what it does in that respect is it puts pressure on AMD now, who has the Radeon 7970 gigahertz edition that was also selling for about $450. And now with that 5%, 5 to 7% difference, you see the 770 just kind of creep up with the 7970, maybe a tiny little bit above in some games and a tiny little bit behind in other games. But the benefit that AMD has is they still have this huge software bundle where you get like, I think if you buy a single 7970, you still get like 4 free games. So, and as of today, the prices are still $450 for the 7970 gigahertz edition. So the idea is this $399 GTX 770 will kind of push the other GPU prices down, the 680s that are going to go away eventually, and then the 7970 products. And then we all benefit from lower priced graphics cards. We just haven't seen it yet. And that's why last week you weren't here, but I was aggravated because when the 780 was released at $650, it is doing the exact opposite of that supposed trend of releasing higher performance part at the same price range, pushing everything else down. What NVIDIA did instead of that was kind of fill in a blank spot.
This could be a sign that NVIDIA and AMD have been watching This Week in Computer Hardware, and they are tired of us. They're recommending people wait to get the best deals on That's performance. True. And they've decided to change their entire pricing model just to screw up us and our standard advice. I'm going to hold my breath, but it's a nice theory. AMD Opteron X Series low power for micro servers. This is like hot on the heels of Josh Walrath wrote this up for PCPer.com. Community Parts, Jaguar, GCM will be branded Opteron X Series. So far, there are two announced products. One utilizes the onboard graphics portion, while the other has the GCN-based unit disabled. The products have a selectable TDP that ranges from 9 watts to 22 watts. It's a pretty big range. This should allow the vendors to further tailor their chips to their individual solutions. Are these going to be found in, like, giant blade server operations?
Yeah, so think of the same environments that we were talking about ARM servers going into, like that whole idea of putting, you know, Cortex A15s into these microserver environments. The same kind of idea would be with these kind of low power designs, right? So even Intel, with their Silvermont architecture, has plans to release a microserver version of that architecture as well, because it helps with some virtualization tasks and that kind of thing. It just makes some things easier, even though, you know, the performance of Jaguar and GCN is obviously not as high as what you get with a top-end Opteron or a top-end Xeon or something like that. It just allows hardware vendors, server vendors, to be a little bit more nimble, create some interesting designs. The benefit, obviously, that you have with something like the Opteron X series is that it's x86. So the whole world knows how to, you know, write server code for x86 designs. You can run Linux on it right away. You can run Windows on it right away. Whatever it is that you want to run on it, you can do that. Whereas when you get into the ARM ecosystem, that's not necessarily the case. There's a lot of libraries and resources that aren't necessarily converted over for that yet. But, you know, AMD is a company that is trying to prove to everybody that they are a small, nimble company, that they are a company that can shift directions very quickly, that they, you know, if they see an opportunity, they can go to it very quickly, as they kind of did with Tomash and Kabini, and with, you know, using, again, that same, it's kind of interesting you think about it. Tomash and Kabini are two of their best parts that they've released recently, in recent memory, for, you know, ultra low cost mobile notebooks and tablets, based on Jaguar and GCN. PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, based on Jaguar and GCN. This Opteron X series part is based on Jaguar and GCN, right? So they say, here, we've got a good architecture and a good system. Let's put it to use in as many places as we can while the iron is hot, I guess.
That sounds smart.
Yeah.
And we want AMD to be successful because they will apply pressure to Intel and actually perhaps ARM and NVIDIA and everyone else and help us to keep, well, to help the market for computers to be affordable, to help keep prices down, to help keep competition up.
Yeah.
Go AMD. I'm in love with the Cirrus 7 Nimbus PC, the SFF Nimbus PC. Tim Berry wrote this up for PC Per. I am a big fan of cooling fins, whether they are found on radial engines on aircraft or motorcycles. And essentially, this is a small form factor PC, quote, called the Nimbus, that uses slices of aluminum to do double duty, both as a case and a passive CPU cooler and heat sink. Intel DQ77KB motherboard, and basically a pretty broad array of anything from like 4 gigabytes of DDR3 and an Intel G1610T CPU up to an i7-3770T, 60 gigabyte MZ SSD. And I haven't found out the maximum memory on this, but it's a really cool picture where they show you, essentially, it's a fanless design. They've got a tight little dense motherboard packed inside this really nice looking aluminum case. And if you scroll down a little bit, Burke, you'll see this crazy shot of the motherboard outside of the case. And essentially, it is just a dense box of cooling that attaches to the heatsink there. I'm excited. $640 US, 499 euros for the base model. That's kind of pricey. For a fairly inexpensive machine.
Yeah, it is.
It's incredibly
pricey.
What
I like about this is that they you can add layers to it as you increase the TDP of the processor that's going to cool. So, you know, they're saying right now we support 17 and 25 and maybe the 34-watt parts, but there's no reason why by adding a little, you know, more layers of aluminum, because they just stack on top of each other, that you're essentially making the heat sink bigger, and there's no reason they couldn't support up to like a 65 watt processor. Just your case gets bigger to do it, obviously. but it just, it's kind of a cool little Lego frame.
I think it's cool. And also, I just noticed on the Cirrus7.com blog page that they have the release has been delayed by at least a month till the end of June. Says Cirrus 7, our preparations are in full swing, but unfortunately, we cannot keep the planned release date. And there's a really cool little animated GIF there that shows the sort of construction of the Lego-like construction of the case.
Yeah.
Built like a sandwich. The return of the ergonomic. We rarely talk about ergonomic anything on this show, which is a pity. Oh, there's the Cirrus 7 stack. Bring it back up, Burke. It's so pretty. Look at that. I like the fact they have this.
It's just a really great idea. So if you want a higher end processor, it just becomes taller. Right? And thus as it becomes taller, it adds more metal to the heatsink and thus can cool a higher power output.
And more room for hard drives and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. You can put whatever you want inside then.
Oh my goodness. Ergonometric keyboards haven't gone away. They're just harder to find than they used to be. Jeremy Hellstrom wrote up the return of the ergonomic just once. There, I said it. Okay, the return of the ergonomic keyboard. For some reason, I see ergonomic and I want to say ergonometric, which I'm not entirely sure is even a word, but the return of the ergonomic keyboard. This time it is mechanical. So it's like Cherry MX Brown keys in an ergo keyboard layout with a pretty unusual split layout on that. I don't know if you can see the link in the show notes I added, Burke, but it was written up by Lan OC, quote, when it comes to ergonomic keyboards, there are only a few to pick from, and for the most part, all those are rubber dome keyboards. Ergonomic mechanical keyboards are really limited to two different models, one being the truly ergonomic, and they take a look at it. It's an interesting keyboard layout, because if you take a look at that center chunk of keys there, it is,
it's like the backspace and the enter delete, and the delete.
So I think it's a really... Yeah, you know, it's a pretty serious commitment you're making there. And as having had a friend who basically destroyed both his wrists programming and uses the kind of basically a keyboard where he manipulates his fingers in one of four different directions to pick letters. Basically his hands plug into this box and he, you know, moves his fingers in four different axes to select letters and keyboard combos and you know, numbers and characters. I've known a few people that have blown out their wrist because they started computing when keyboards really, really sucked. You know, I think ergonometrics is important, and ergonometrics in your workstation is important on using a keyboard tray. And perhaps someday we should do an entire episode on that, but I don't think it's ever going to happen. Epic Games? What is with Epic Games being so disappointed by the PS4 and the Xbox One?
They didn't actually say that. But it was an article written up by Scott on our site that talks about basically, I think it was 18 months ago or somewhere around that, you know, Epic came out and said, this is what we want to see in the next generation of consoles, right?
So about 3 years too late to actually impact.
They
put out their list of demands.
They put out a list of demands, essentially, where they said, this is what we want. This is the kind of performance we want. This is the type of quality we want in order to make the best engine we can for the next generation. They apparently came up fairly short of that. They wanted like 2.5 teraflops of compute performance. What they got was less than two. Not that great. And then this was kind of accentuated when one of the EA's CEO came out and said that the Xbox One and PS4 are a generation ahead of highest end PCs on the market, which immediately created a storm of anger and hatred from the PC gaming market, DIY market, right? Saying, how can you possibly say this? And then Mark Rain, who is the CEO, I think, still at Epic Games, sent out a tweet quoting that EA executive and then saying, no, they're not. I call BS on this one, right? And so kind of in a not so subtle way saying, yeah, quit talking out of your butt, right? This is they're better, right, but they're not great. They're not the fastest thing out there. You know, think about the PlayStation 4 has 1,152 shaders in it, while the HD 7970 has 2,048 of the same architecture. It just has a close to double the graphics performance on that system. Now, PS4 could still be a great deal if it comes out like $400 or something, right? And it'll be a great performer for that for a certain amount of time going forward. But you know, they have to live on a longer life cycle than PCs do, right? Consoles are going to last 10 years. So I would say Epic, of all of the developers that I, you know, have had interactions with, is the most outspoken in terms of this type of thing. And I think they were, you know, genuinely hoping that their demands, not their demands, but their hopes for what the next console generation would have would be met and they could do certain things with it, and they just haven't been met. So, you know, they had to scale back on some of these things, right? So it's actually interesting. If you look at that story that Scott posted, he's got an animated image there that shows the difference between a particular demo that was shown on the PS4 when the PS4 was announced, or a little bit, yeah, I think when the PS4 was announced, versus when it was on the PC. And the PC demo was actually shown quite a while ago, up a little bit more to the animated one with the fiery looking god thing. They're going to have to scale back a little bit. And the whole, I think one of the things we hoped, especially on this show and PC gamers in general, was that the consoles would be more powerful so that falls back onto PC gaming as well, right? So it seems like that will be a shorter period of time of...
They're vastly more balance. Powerful. They're just still vastly less powerful than the top-of-the-line gaming PCs.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd say vastly less powerful, but it's like, you know, the 1080p gaming is not that strenuous compared to, like,
agreed.
You know, what it takes 4K gaming. So
I believe that a PS4, when it ships, let's say November, will match maybe like the performance of your kind of $600 or $700 PC. It will probably sell for $300-$400 or something like that. So, you know, it will be a good value hardware wise and gaming wise, performance wise for probably that first year. And then as happens when the hardware stays static, is it starts to get behind again. Fall so behind. We'll see. We will see. And hopefully, like I said, I'll be at E3 in a couple of weeks. Maybe somebody will answer it. Probably not likely, but maybe somebody will answer it.
Windows 8.1 can boot to a desktop and has a button. The preview version of 8.1 is supposed to be released at the Build Developers Conference June 26th for my birthday. Microsoft is bringing back the start button and the desktop to Windows. It's a pretty good write-up on... Paul Thurrott actually, I'm clicking on the right window. There it is. You guys linked to Paul Thurrott's story, didn't you?
We did.
I was going to say, yeah. And I'd also like to thank everyone who helped me understand it is Paul Thurrott, not Paul Thoreau. But Mary Jo Foley has a bunch of information. Paul Thurrott has a bunch of information. And then like a day later, after I've been tweeting all this out, blogs.windows.com releases a long, long, long blog entry continuing the Windows 8 vision with Windows 8.1. And that's
quite a few comments on it too.
Yeah, you think? Windows 8.1 will advance the bold vision set forward with Windows 8 to deliver the next generation of PCs, tablets, and a range of industry devices and the experiences customers, both consumers and businesses alike, need and will just expect moving forward. It's Windows 8 even better. Because it's Windows 8 without the people whining about the missing boot to desktop feature. I like Windows 8. I actually like Metro. I don't use it very often. Desktop.
No.
A lot of stuff going on. I'm really curious what the actual final ship date on Windows 8.1 is going to be, but I'm going to see if I can scam a copy of that from the Build conference.
Cool.
So that should be exciting stuff.
I mean, does this fix anything for Windows?
I don't think Windows is that broken. I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, that would be a Mary Jo Foley question because I was not, you know, there's been so much, nobody's using Windows 8. Windows 8 is broken. The adoption rate is horrible. And it's like, well, you know, PC sales are horrible and it's a different market right now and a lot's going on and tablets are on the rise. So,
right.
You know, it's, you know, sometimes, you know, you do something that irritates some of your current customers now so you can have all the customers later, you know, I'm kind of curious, like, you know, I think it was Anand over at Anantech who commented like, hey, are we seeing the beginnings of, you know, the Xbox as being a platform rather than just a console and what that means overall to Microsoft and how they handle things and how it, you know, it's just, there's a lot of stuff going on at Microsoft because they have this, you know, they have this huge thing going on with the Xbox and this huge thing going on with the Windows desktop. And they're trying so hard to break into mobile and, you know, they're trying so hard to, you know, work with Intel to push the tablet concept and they're, you know, trying to move the interface forward. And they made a really noble attempt to kind of push people out of their comfort zone and into something, you know, a new way of relating to the PC. There's a lot going on there. You know, meanwhile, you know, Google's doing things like, you know, moving to entirely different elements of computing. Not so much our CTO, Rob DeMille was pointing out is not so much in the fact that they strapped a computer to your face, but the fact that the entire relationship to the computer in that situation is essentially based on events. It's just there's a lot going on in computing right now. Microsoft's not hurting for money, and I think Windows 8 is probably going to do a lot better than people give it credit for. I've been wrong before, but one thing I am not wrong about, ladies and gentlemen, is man packs. Pretty good stuff, right? You're a dude. You have things to do. Maybe you hate shopping. Ryan, you are not a shopper by nature, are you?
Absolutely not. If I'm not going into a store knowing what I want so I can leave immediately, I'm not going.
I will spend hours shopping for the sheer unbridled joy of staring at stuff that will never fit me. But generally speaking, I still manage not to have, you know, socks without holes in them. Going into the grocery store to find shaving cream makes me want to beat my face with a stick, which is a poor, poor substitute for shaving, with or without shaving. And it's pretty cool, right? So the idea is Manpacks is going to do is going to provide you with things you need. They're going to ship to your house. They're going to make it super simple because they're only going to stock what they've kind of vetted as quality goods. And you will have socks that are not worn out. You will have fresh underwear, which, trust me, you may not realize you need, but ask the ladies, ask the guys you live with, the ladies you live with, whoever's in your life, trust me, they would like to see you in fresh underwear. They would like to see, if not necessarily fancy underwear, but underwear that doesn't look like you've been living in it for a couple of years. So Manpacks is really cool. Thousands of men have already signed up. You don't have to shop your manly basics again. It's a start and stop, a change at any time subscription for your basic essentials. They give you a reminder before your shipment so you can say no or you can change things. But basically, every 3 months, you get a care package from Manpacks. Instead of mom sending you fresh underwear at college, which, dude, you really should have had handled by then, they are going to send you what you pick, whether it's shaving cream or additional razors or... you know, your underwear, your sock selection. It's really, 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 really cool. I like ex officio boxers, which they actually have. Burke's, of course, going to show the terribly clingy kind, which I will not wear because, quite frankly, there are certain terrible things that just not need to be seen in the world. They've got some excellent razor options. They've got everything from old school safety blade razors to, you know, the latest like 42 blade wonders. I exaggerate slightly. And it's cool. Basically, you set it up. You know, they give you a heads up that it's coming. You can change it if you need to. And you have staples without having to go through the trauma of going to like REI for my boxer shorts and Costco to buy razors. And oh, wait, Costco doesn't start. You know what I mean? It's like it's neat to actually have it all show up. I got a man pack. I was excited because it was full of razors and boxer shorts. It's cool.
This is the
it's
promise cool. of the That's internet, right? Never having to leave to do mundane, dumb things.
Solving cancer and curing disease and enabling the individual to prosper. No, the internet is all about not having to leave the house and have fresh underwear. I mock because I like it. Back off, people. Manpacks.com/twit is the website. You get one of two exclusive offers as a Twit listener, as part of the Twit family while you're listening here on Twitch. $10 off your first order, $30 or more. Or you can score a $50 gift card for $40. Ladies or men in the audience, if you want to tell somebody that it's time to upgrade their underwear, perhaps a man pack is the way to do it. Manpacks.com/twit. We want to thank Manpacks for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware and for delivering delightful boxes full of incredibly useful stuff.
Indeed.
TWICH. Twitch at twit.tv is the email address. We love answering your questions. And we got a kind of a big one about monitor mounts from Jason. He says, hey guys, Jason from Ohio here. I know what you're thinking, but yes, there are some nerds hiding in between the cornfields. Dude, they're not hiding. They're proud. And they're kicking my ass online and gaming. First, the obvious, love the show. You guys always teach me a little bit of something new each week, which is greatly appreciated. Thanks, Jason. We'd like to hear that. On to my question. Well, it may not be exactly hardware related. I'm hoping you can help. I'm currently wrapping up the print and carpet of the man cave basement and been starting to think about workspace design. Currently have two 22-inch monitors and was hoping to throw a third in the mix. However, I would prefer to put them on a single triple monitor mount. Problem is there aren't that many to choose from. I figure this would be a more common one, but there just aren't that many in the places I'm looking. Newegg and Amazon each have a single stand with mediocre reviews. Any pointers on where I would be able to find some solid options, or am I just trying to do something uncommon? Thanks for any advice. triple monitor mounts. It's kind of funny because they're, you know, the nice ones are expensive and cheap ones don't necessarily hold your monitor up very well. But
right.
eBay actually has been a pretty good source of computer monitor mounts. Let me see.
I'm confused. He says he looked on Amazon and he only found one.
Okay,
I see several. There's one, the ErgoTech triple horizontal.
Uh-huh.
$220, 4.5 stars out of 5 stars on 66 customer reviews. Supports 25 pounds per pivot. And what's the monitor size here? Come on, information. Oh, yeah, I can go up to 24. So he's looking to get, no, up to 28 inches.
Wow.
So, yeah, mostly good there. You know, there's 46 5-star reviews. So, I mean, that's
yeah.
That seems to be pretty good. I will agree that I have two different 3-monitor mounts here, and they just seem to vary in quality. One of the things that I've always had trouble with is getting all 3 displays to line up exactly correct.
It's a nightmare. It's
not as easy as it should be. You know, if one is hanging just, you know, a quarter of an inch lower than the other, like the bezel is just a quarter or a half inch lower than the other, that's going to annoy the crap out of you. So you got to make sure that, you know, follow all the directions, that you're tightening the bolts in the right order, so that they're kind of, you know, all on the same playing field in that regard. I mean, the problem I kind of have with these triple monitor stands is they're kind of expensive. I mean, this one's right. This ErgoTech triple is $220 with free shipping. So that's actually not too bad. Actually, and well, that's a desk stand one.
I found one that it's kind of funny. I'm a big fan of the human scale monitor mounts, which occasionally show up on eBay really cheap. One you're looking at right now is the triple LCD monitor desk mount stand, heavy duty adjustable 3 screens up to 21 inch, which of course won't work in this case. I missed that 21 inch part at the end, but it's funny because like, you know, if there's any kind of play. The downside of it's for an HDTV, if you're going to mount an HDTV and walk away from it, you can usually get some fantastic mounts for not much money. And we were talking about that on AC Nation the other day, and it was interesting because, you know, it's when you want to start to be able to move and position things that actually spending more money gets you some really useful stuff, like joints that don't wear out immediately or that
right.
don't flex under the weight of the yep. monitor, or worse yet, flex unequally under the weight of the monitor, or multiple joint systems where the entire thing starts to bend, but it bends more on the outside armatures and less on the inside armatures because the outside armatures are longer and provide more leverage. It's really frustrating. If somebody's getting, you know, a fair amount, because one, there's just not a lot of people buying triple monitor mounts. So two, you know, go with what Ryan said. If somebody's getting decent reviews on Amazon, that's probably a safe bet at this point.
Yeah. I think the one of the ones I have here is an ErgoTech. It's one that the three 3D vision displays are actually connected to, and it, you know, it's one of those things where to get them at the same level, you're going to have to, you know, set them all up, pick one that you think is perfect, and then like kind of minutely adjust the angle to the VESA mount on both of them and that kind of stuff. But it works well. It's sturdy. It's held up. It hasn't broken or anything like that. And I move mine a lot from desk to desk, you know, with like pushing the monitors together and kind of lifting it up. So if that's not going to do anything to it, chances are just sitting there won't do anything. But you could always look into custom build. Like if you're handy, you know, get some lumber and, you know, build it to suit yourself. Back in the day, Colleen built one for 3 30-inch panels that was on ball bearings that each one would rotate individually, which was pretty awesome. Tried to get her to build me one, but shipping was going to be expensive. So
those, I mean, you could have freaking used those things to launch rockets off of. They were bomb-proof. I remember back when 30-inch monitors were even more rare and expensive than they are now, all of a sudden Colleen had a house full of 30-inch flat panels and we're all like,
It was pretty cool.
It was pretty awesome. Brandon wants a summary of the AMD CPU stack. He says it's been a long time since I've been paying attention to the processing world. Intel seems pretty self-explanatory with their processor lineup for a possible desktop build, but AMD is a different story. I understand that AMD has fallen, but what's all? But that's all I used to. Excuse me. I understand that AMD. AMD has fallen. Just sounds even crueler than us talking about AMD. I understand that AMD has fallen, but that's all I used to buy. Not to mention, I like the underdog, but their lineup with the FX, A-Series, and a Black Edition is all over the place. Can you give me a brief summary of it? Thanks, guys. Loving the show. And I was thinking like AMD CPU stack, like we're going to talk about the arcane underpinnings of how AMD processors make their decisions. And what we're talking about is the arcane naming system that has been...
Right.
Cobbled together by AMD.
Yeah. So for the desktop market, as of today, there's really only two product categories that you need to be aware of. They have the kind of bulldozer-esque processors that are just go by the name, the AMD FX series, just the letter F and the letter X. Those are 6-core and 8-core options. Those are, they don't have integrated graphics or anything like that. They're simply processors. I think they have 8-core up to, the FX 8350 goes up to, I think, 4.1 gigahertz, something like that, with its turbo speeds. 4.2 gigahertz with turbo. So that's kind of one section. The other section is your APU lineup, and that is typically a quad-core processor based on the same type of architecture, but then you get GCN. With Trinity, you get GCN graphics. You get you get integrated graphics. It is actually better than what you get out of Intel. Now, the downside of that is that it's a slower CPU side. Those are really the only ones you need to really worry about. So like the whole Athlon series is pretty much gone. The Phenom series we loved as long as they would manufacture it. The Phenom 2X6 was probably our favorite AMD processor because it was cheaper and faster than in many times the 8-core FX8150. But that's gone. I'm looking through a product page on AMD, remembering things like Sempron. Athlon X2, Phenom X2, all those kinds of things. It's really only for a desktop user, AMD FX series for your kind of high performance processor. And I say that somewhat with a caveat being that the highest end part I think is $199. And it's gonna perform about as well as $199 Intel part would. But then if you want to get into APU, you want some integrated graphics that's actually better performing than anything Intel has, that's what Trinity is today. That's what Richland will be next month. And that's a 4-core CPU with, 800 cores of graphics and that kind of stuff. So it's not as complicated as it may seem. There's just two completely independent lines that are not, they're not named anywhere close to together because they're not really related parts. One is a processor and one is an APU. Yeah.
But both are
Intel has just as many problems. But
operating systems, yeah. Well, Core i3, Core i5, Core i7, Atom, this, that, the other thing.
Yes.
Yes. On that bright and cheerful note, we should probably call this edition of This Week Computer Hardware, Twitch, TWICH, twit.tv is the email address if you want to send us questions. At Ryan Shrout and at Patrick Norton is the best place to find us on the Twitter. PC Purr has excitement coming up this week, I bet.
Dude, it's all Haswell. It's all Z87 motherboards. This month kicked our butt. We had the 780 launch. We had the 770 launch. We have mobility GPUs that we still haven't gotten the reviews out for. We have Richland and Haswell and Z87. And Computex starts next week. It's if you like
Are
hardware.
You going to Computex?
I am like not hardware. Going to Computex. I am
Go back to if you like hardware.
If you like hardware, this is a week to pay attention because there's going to be a lot of releases on the component side, which is great. If you like ultra books, if you like ultra small form factor type stuff, there's going to be announcements there. Computex, there's going to be announcements about, ARM-based stuff. There's a whole lot of things that are going to happen in the next, don't know, what day is it? 5 days, 6 days. Luckily, I get to deal with it all here instead of in Taiwan this year. I did not go out there just because of all these product launches. But check out PCPro.com. We will have plenty of stuff for you to read starting like on Saturday. So,
oh, goodness.
Yeah. It oh, and also, I should plug on Tuesday of next week, Tuesday, June, what, 4th, I guess that would be. We are hosting, we're having a live stream with JJ from Asus, who's coming out to show off their entire line of Z87 products, go over unique features. We're going to talk about Haswell overclocking and that kind of stuff. We have some motherboards and graphics cards to give away, too. So check out PCPro.com on the right-hand side. You'll see a schedule there, and I'll start to fill in the detail of what segments are going to be covered at what time on Tuesday, because we're probably going to stream for several hours throughout the afternoon. So check that out.
Way cool. Oh, my goodness. We had a lot of fun on HG Nation. We actually have a long format, like a long version of HG Nation. Again, it's up on youtube.com/techfeed. Robert's got the review of the Panasonic ST60, which is a fantastic, affordable, fantastic 55-inch plasma from Panasonic. And we demo some sound lag testing software, talk about why you won't have to change your cables for 4K. And I'm going to be adding a terabyte to my iPad on Techzilla on Monday, and talking about this lovely, lovely Harman Kardon audio-equipped Kira Ultrabook from Toshiba. And I wait with bated breath. We're going to get you on to talk about all this craziness going on in hardware right now. Especially with Haswell on the edge. It is going to be a good week. I myself will be basically living vicariously through Ryan. On PCPro.com. It is good stuff, people. It is very, very good stuff.
Thank you.
And yeah, man, it's, I'm starting to, I didn't think I was ever going to lust after a new processor again, but Haswell almost has me lusting, at least in the laptop.
We'll see there. Soon. Yeah, we'll see soon.
We wait with bated breath. I would ask you more questions, but I'm pretty sure you're under NDA for any of the answers. Yeah, that's it for this edition of Twitch This Week Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Gordon.
I'm Ryan Strout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.